White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 240.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo, Lorindo, Lorindo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we got several big things that happened in the news this week that we need to talk about. I think we probably need to start out with our big new commitment. What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right. So tell the folks, if they haven't heard already, and I'm sure they have, what's going down?
I thought you were going to have some kind of joke there, so I hesitated.
That's what I do. I set expectations over here, and then I zag over there. See, so you're just
keeping me off balance.
Keep you off balance. That's right.
So, quarterback Jared Stidham committed to Auburn last night. It's big news on the recruiting front. Very exciting. He's listed as a junior college guy, but he technically he has 3 years of eligibility left, and he can enroll. He's going to enroll next week and go through. He'll be able to go through practices with the team before the Sugar Bowl and go through spring practice and summer practice and fall practice. So he is definitely coming, and that's very exciting. He was a very highly rated quarterback out of high school. He went to Baylor for 1 year, and then when everything happened there, he left and transferred out. And he went to a junior college in Texas, but instead of playing football and burning a year of eligibility, he just went to junior college for a year and went to class. Mm-hmm. And he spent the time working out. And if you've read some of the stories, one of the things he did is he actually volunteered at a local high school and quarterbacked the scout team against their defense to give him live practice reps and also to help out, you know, the local high school team who weren't going to face that kind of quarterback in their game. So, it's a huge deal, and we need to talk through the implications of it, but he was a big target. And because of the questions about the quarterback depth chart and, you know, concerns about everybody being healthy, I think it was he's a big commit. So there's a couple of sides to this. We got to talk about how does it affect the current guys on the roster, and then what does he actually bring to the table, and then what do we see kind of happening?
Mm-hmm. Before we do that, I got to ask this: what must that high school defense have thought, like on during the week in practice? They're going up against their scout team, sorry old, you know, scrub of a quarterback, Jason Stidham, and he's probably airing it out and, you know, running for touchdowns and throwing for touchdowns. And they're like, man, we just suck as a defense. And they go out there on Friday nights and they're probably like, hey, we're not so bad.
Nope. These high school quarterbacks can't put it in the same place as he could put it. So
exactly. I just imagine what that must be like.
So, yeah, I mean, the big thing is, I think – it's exciting because Stidham was a very highly recruited player out of high school. On the 24/7 rankings of, like, just their rankings, not their composite of everybody else's rankings, but just their rankings, he was number one of all quarterbacks, not just dual threat quarterbacks, in the year he came out of high school in 2015. So ahead of, Josh Rosen, DeAndre Francois, the guy at Washington, Lamar Jackson, whoever, you know, Kyler Murray, whoever else came out there.
Browning, I think, is the guy at Washington.
Yeah. Browning, Jake Browning, Drew Locke, the guy at Missouri, Sam Darnold, the guy at USC. So he was on their list of just them. He was number one. Okay, so Josh Rosen, who a lot of people – he was hurt this year, but a lot of people still think is like, you know, top five pick in the draft kind of talent ahead of that. So he has enormous ability.
Right.
And he played in three games at Baylor. The starting quarterback ahead of him got hurt. He played in three games. He played at Kansas State, at home against Oklahoma. This was Oklahoma. They were ranked fifth. This was the Oklahoma team that went to the playoff and lost to Clemson. Mm-hmm. And on the road at number 20, Oklahoma State. He played well in those games, threw for a bunch of yards, ran for a few yards, and made plays. And so I think his ceiling is very high. I think that's the exciting part as an Auburn fan. We've seen what – you love this offense. We've seen how it could go to another gear when it has a quarterback who has a lot of ability. And I think he has the ability to kind of unlock some of that. I like that he's, going to get here early, get to go through some practices and stuff. So how does this affect, Sean White, Woody Barrett? To me, it's no guarantee that Stidham gets the job, even though I just went through talking about how much talent he has. Sean White has been the quarterback, and I think his teammates respect him, respect his toughness and the plays that he made. And I think Sean White's a gamer, and he's going to come out and try to, keep the job. And he may do it. I mean, there's no guarantee that just because Stidham's here, he's going to win it. Now, I think he probably eventually will, but it's not a sure thing. And I think part of that – so to me, I think too often with – we don't look at other positions like this. We only look at quarterback like this. With quarterback, people think, well, we got one guy, he's a starter. We got one guy, he's the future or whatever. Mm-hmm. And based on how our last two seasons have went, we can't think like that. We need to have multiple guys that can play now.
Let me comment on that exact thing, because that's a very good point. That is something that I have changed my tune on dramatically since the preseason this year, up through this year's preseason, right? I thought of it exactly like you're saying. Like, I was always drawing up little depth charts. Like, okay, this guy's going to be the guy this year and next year, and then he'll graduate, and then this guy will step up, and he'll have 2 years or a year or 3 years, And I had it all like that. If you look around the SEC in 2016, you have to revise your thinking to, well, this guy's going to be the quarterback for the first three games, and then this guy's going to come in for four in the middle there, and then maybe we'll get the first one back, or maybe we'll go to the third one at that point, because they get hurt so much now. I mean, there's a whole other off-season show that I really want us to have, maybe in the spring, John, where we can talk about football and how, as much as we dearly love it, like life itself, I'm starting to worry that it's becoming with these gigantic, fast, huge guys landing on your shoulders every play, it seems like. I just don't see how any quarterbacks have any shoulders left. So there's a show to be had where we talk about injuries and the way that the sport is going, which worries me. Because I don't want football to go away, and I worry if it's going to get back like it was with Teddy Roosevelt, where they say this sport is just too dangerous and too violent, and start doing something about it. Now, that said, as long as it continues the way it is now, it's not having a quarterback of this year and a quarterback of next year and a quarterback of the next. It's how many quarterbacks do you have for this year, because you're going to need them.
That's
and I'm
right.
I'm not so worried about Woody Barrett saying, "Oh, I'm getting out of here," because he might be in by the Georgia game, I hate it.
That's right.
That's the way it goes.
And I think that's exactly the right attitude. Is like, you have to look at this and say, all three of those guys have been injured. Yep. I mean, the reason Stidham didn't start more than three games is because somebody broke his ankle.
Hurt his throwing hand.
Right, he hurt his hand. And so he, was injured at the end of last season, and then he sat out this season. So he, you know, it'll be like 18 months since he's played organized football other than this high school practice stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and he's been working with coaches and throwing and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's certainly going to be some rust that is there. And you know, Sean White, we've talked about, you know, he started three games last year, got hurt. He started four games this year and got hurt. And so I think I love Sean White. I love the way he plays. I love his toughness. And I think that you could see it this year. The team played better when he was in the game. And I think he just has that kind of leadership thing that the team played better when he was in the game. But I don't believe he can make it through a whole SEC season, like you're saying. So you've got to have multiple guys. Mm-hmm. So I feel 100 times better from the perspective of Stidham is a starting quarterback. Say Stidham's a starting quarterback and he gets banged up, we can rest him and play Sean White. And there's not a lot of drop off. We can go, and Sean White could go win the game. And if Sean White gets banged up and we're playing Louisiana Monroe the next week, we could sit both those guys out. Woody Bear could go mop them up.
Yeah.
So I, you know, that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, we don't have to throw one of those guys out there where they're not 100%. And it just gives us a better chance, you know, to go into the big games with our quarterbacks healthy.
Yeah. And as far as John Franklin goes, I mean, you know, I think it really is up to him. I mean, he can come back and be the third or fourth string quarterback and keep doing what he does, which is running for 90-yard touchdowns against Arkansas State or something like that. Or he can change positions and try to be on the field more as a sort of Ontario McCaleb type player. Or he can transfer. I mean, he's played, you know, see if he can set the record for playing at the most different schools in one career before he goes – before he finishes college. I don't think he's going to the NFL at the current rate.
No, he's way too small.
Right. You know, he's. We were just talking on Twitter today about this player. He's starting to remind me of Trevon Reed, who mm-hmm. was like an all-everything five-star player when we got him. In fact, it's funny looking back, he may have been a higher-ranked prospect than Cam Newton, and they both came in the same year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he never really amounted to much until in his final year they put him as a defensive back, and I think he's playing in the NFL now as a defensive back.
He had a gigantic interception of Cam Newton in the NFL today.
Yeah, so he, just like Nick Marshall, he played, you know, one or two different positions at Auburn and then went off and played as a defensive back in the NFL. We do recruit athletic guys that can play a lot of positions. They just have to fit into somebody's, you know, offense or defense. So, maybe he'll end up as a defensive back. I'm sure he doesn't want to hear that, but I don't know. But I'm not that worried about it because I feel like, you know, this year in 2016, we had zero quarterbacks on the roster who had practiced enough at all and that were built for this system. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, we may very well have two plus Sean White, who is very, very good at what he does, and we can
yes.
win with him. So all these people that keep complaining that Gus had no backup plan, I've never quite understood what that means exactly, but what it is that in 2016, we had the team we had, and they worked really hard on changing that. I mean, you know, we talked about before, Woody Barrett arrived late and couldn't, you know, didn't have command of the offense or enough practice yet. Well,
and then he got banged up in practice.
Yeah, so he should be, by this time next year, he should be, or a little earlier, he should be, you know, starting to compete for things. Stidham should be able to figure things out. I mean, his only drawback right now that we know of, other than meshing with the players and the team, is that he's got to learn the offense. Sean's obviously got a big leg up on him there. I mean, even John Franklin's got a big leg up on him there. You'll have Stidham and Barrett that both should really fit our offense. And then Sean being really good at what he does, he's almost like a prototypical backup quarterback in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's three good quarterbacks. You know, you lose Jeremy Johnson and you gain Stidham. That's I call that a win, you know.
I love Jeremy, but that's training up.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you mentioned in our show notes that's a big injection of optimism for the team. Well, there's another big injection of optimism is that we're not losing Cameron Petway. Petway will be back. So we'll have Kerryon Johnson, Cameron Petway. We should have Malik Miller back healthy and a couple of freshmen coming in and Cameron Martin after a year getting bigger and stronger in the system and everything. I mean, everything people want to say bad about our offense in 2016, and much of it is deserved, no doubt about it. But everything people might want to say bad about our offense in 2016, I feel like it's going to be better in 2017.
Well, I think our off. I mean, this Petway thing was huge.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really, thought about it. But when I thought about, he's married and has a child already.
Hmm.
So the idea of – and he would get drafted if he went to the NFL. So the idea of going to the NFL and getting drafted and playing for money has to have an appeal.
Sure.
Rather than doing it for free and staying in college. I understand that part. And you're – especially as a running back, the number of carries that you have is a finite number, with the pounding they take. So – I wouldn't have blamed him if he had decided to go pro, but I'm really glad he didn't.
Auburn's sake. Isn't he a sophomore this year?
He's a redshirt sophomore.
Oh, okay. So this is his third year. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember when he came in.
No, you have to be in college for 3 years to be able to declare. And
that's what I thought.
He redshirted and then he played the last 2 years. So, I think we have to look at it as a situation where, probably next year will be his last year if everything goes well. But you're right. I mean, him being back as kind of the bell cow running back. The other thing about Stidham I didn't say is that his, other than being like bigger, physically much bigger than Sean and being able to being a pretty good athlete and able to run the ball some, his other thing, his great strength is throwing the deep ball.
Yeah.
And when this offense is really humming at its best, as you always say, like that's when we're running the ball and then we're hitting them with the over the top deep pass. And we didn't do that a ton this year. I think some of it was because of the quarterbacks, some was because of the receivers, and some of it was because of the offensive line. But I think next year, with the offense clicking, I think you're going to see that a lot more.
This goes out to Cameron Petway.
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you.
And this one.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
That's right. And you're doomed for the SEC. Man, I hope he runs for 2,000 yards next year. I'm just trying to imagine. I mean, because – yeah, that was the word on Stidham, is that he completed almost 70% of his passes as a true freshman and throws the deep ball. I mean, all those freshman receivers will be second year receivers when he gets to start throwing with them. See, so I feel pretty good about that. I feel pretty good about that.
So I think the offense is going to take a huge leap forward next year. I really do. I think the pieces are there. I worry about tackle a little bit. We got to replace Robert Leff. So there's, what's going to happen with that. But I mean, all the other pieces are there to really, really be effective on offense.
All right. I'll go ahead and say this. And I'm sure there's a whole lot of our listeners that'll want to hear this. Okay. So lean in close and listen. Here it is. If we come out next year through the first two or three games and our offense looks like it did against Georgia this year, I'll get on that bandwagon with you. You know which one I mean. Yeah, if we have all these pieces – now, look, if everybody gets hurt in the A-Day game and we're out there with, the kid with no elbow and handing off to and that's the whole offense, then I'll take it back. But, I mean, if everything is how it's supposed to be, and we still have nothing going, then I'll think about changing my tune. And by the way, the main thing that pulled Stidham into Auburn is his relationship with
Rhett Lashley.
There you go. The guy that's been thrown under every bus from here to Toledo.
And I think it was big for Lashley Gus to get him. I mean, because of this, depth issue, and because of the optimism I think he's going to generate for next season, I think he's going to help with that stuff. So,
yep.
But you're right. The Petway thing is huge. I haven't really sat down and looked. And we know Carl Lawson's going pro. I mean, that's a done deal. There are one or two other guys on the roster that I think could go, like are eligible.
Well, Montravius is a senior, right? So he's gone.
Yeah, he's a senior. He's gone.
He makes lots of money in the pros, but I sure will miss him.
Yeah. Rudy Ford's a senior. He's gone. Robert West's a senior. He's gone. A couple of their older receivers are gone. So
losing some good, good solid contributors off this team. Not a ton of them, but, several very key players there.
Sure. No, I mean, we'll have plenty of time to go through what we think about next year. But I think, off the top of my head, the only positions that I'm worried about is like pass rush. I mean, that's something I worry about next year.
Yeah. Yeah. At least we had a good, well-stocked defensive line, though, so we should be able to step up the next few guys.
Oh, yeah.
They had a little high school all-star game. I didn't get to see or hear much about it. What do you know?
What I know is Auburn had a few guys playing on the Alabama side, and they've had some very good games. You had a guy named T.D. Moultrie, who's a linebacker, who had a huge game. And we had another linebacker named K.J. Britt, who had a very good game. We have a defensive back named Malcolm Askew, who had a kind of game-sealing interception. And he's one of these guys that's enrolling early. He's, signing up. He's coming to campus next week or whatever. So we had one big play wide receiver. I can't pronounce his name, but he had a couple of big catches in the game. It's like,
all right. Now look, I said this on the AU sports list today. I'm like, look, I was able to learn how to say Ben Obamanu. Okay. This was before anybody ever heard of President Obama. I was able to say Ben Obamanu. I was even able to learn how to say Devin Aromashadu, but this is a bridge too far, John. This guy's name, I'm sorry, it's a word scramble. Ibn Gagin something. I know. Nickname needed immediately. Nickname. He's on nickname alert. Got to find a nickname for him because Iggy? Ibby? Something like that? Because I got to draw the line somewhere is what I'm saying here. All respect to his family. I'm sure it's a fine, proud family name. But come on, give us a break, man. I feel bad for Rod Bramblett.
it's Rod's job. He can handle it. So he's a pro.
I hope so.
But no, they had a good game, and it was exciting to see them out there making plays. And it really the big thing on that team was we have a very strong group of linebackers. And so they're going to come right in and provide immediate depth and they're going to play. I don't know if they're going to start because of the guys that are coming back, but I think they're going to relieve those guys. They're going to play a lot of special teams and play a lot in the blowouts and the games against lesser teams and get a lot of experience. So they're in positions to take over for some of these guys when they're going. So
I think about Tadarian T.D. Moultrie, and it makes me a little nervous that we're going to have a linebacker named T.D. Don't you want to have your linebacker named No T.D.?
No, but he makes plays, man.
Don't you want to be named field goal or turnover on downs Moultrie?
He's going to take the ball away from them and score a T.D.
Sacked in the backfield Moultrie? Something like that.
He's going to take the ball away from them and score. That's what he's going to do.
Well, if Alabama can have a linebacker with an Auburn tattoo, we can have a linebacker whose name means the worst thing that could possibly happen when he's on the field. So that's fine.
Yeah.
I got to point out the Auburn Hoops team is playing, as you're listening to this, probably tonight, Monday night in Madison Square Garden in New York City. Auburn plays Boston College. And the Hoops team's only lost one game so far. Now, they got a size issue, obviously. But they got what they got, man, is getting it going, don't they? I mean, I've enjoyed watching this Hoops team.
Very exciting. And Mustafa Heron's great. Purifoy's been really fun to watch. Clearly, they have a lot of pieces, and I think they're not meshing as well as they're going to be a couple weeks from now. And we still looks like Wiley could still get clear to be able to play this year. That is in the works. So he could be eligible, by January 1st, I think. So,
Those things never seem to work out, though. They kept thinking that about Purifoy. Man, you watch Purifoy play, though, and you realize how they said last year he was like the best player on the team, and he was on the scout team or whatever, the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so, yeah.
You can see it.
If they had a center, you know, if they had any kind of center, I could see us getting into tournament play. But as it is, we are so dependent on long shots. They are so dependent on hitting three-pointers and long shots. They don't have a lot of a power game down inside. From what I've seen, other than they're really good at doing alley-oops. Did you notice that? They're really good at that because they're so fast and they can jump, but they don't have a lot of power game down inside. But I like a lot their they're very streaky, because if they start hitting three-pointers, they'll beat anybody. But if they're not hitting long shots, then they can just about lose to anybody. So
because
they get a little out of control.
Well, and if they're not hitting the threes well, they need to be creating a bunch of turnovers, getting easy baskets in transition. That's the kind of
and defense is a big part of what Pearl does too. So that'll get better, right? Because defense, a lot of defense is teamwork, and like you said, they got a mesh. So one other thing I want to mention in the news section, then we'll see if there's anything else I've left out or you've left out. I was having a Twitter conversation today with Chad Scott, who writes for Gridiron Now, and he invited me to send in a column for his part article for his column that's going up on Monday, or today if you're listening on Monday, where basically he's giving kind of the glass half empty view of the season for football, and I'm given sort of the glass half full. What a shock, right? And so I had a 300 word limit. I want to make that clear. I could have gone on and on, but I had a 300 word limit. And being a pulp writer, I'm used to writing for the number of words. So my contribution was exactly 300 words. I polished that sucker like a diamond to 300 words, and I sent it in. So he may reject it outright, and that's fine, but maybe it'll be up on Gridiron Now this coming week, so we'll see. Anything else in news or whatever before we get to everybody's favorite segment?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mira, hit the button.
Time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
And I hear we've got quite a few listener questions. So what do we got?
We got some good ones. The first one I like is from Logan Chilton, who just emailed it just a few minutes ago.
Okay.
And he says, I think the AU Wishbone is the most credible sports discussion available because y'all are unadulterated.
Oh, my God!
He said,
my cold.
Nope, sorry, wrong button. I was losing my mind. You're going crazy. Hold on.
He says,
there we go. he says such a nice compliment about our show, and I proceed to just ruin it by playing all kind of weird sound effects. That's pretty much par for the course on this show, I'm afraid.
All right, I'm starting over. I think the AU Wishbone is the most credible sports discussion available because y'all are unadulterated homers. This means you understand better than any neutral discussion how we Auburn fans feel and can speak directly to us. You have ridden the roller coaster and experienced the crazy cocktail of emotions the Auburn faithful feel, and your analysis reflects that. Maybe there's another more technical group, and maybe the Wishbone's hot takes are hotter, but they are founded in a genuine love of Auburn and of the Auburn spirit.
Well, that's definitely true.
Listening to the show is and just knowing I'm not the only one going nuts sometimes gets me through the unique reality of being an Auburn fan, so thank you.
Wow. And
I like that.
That's pretty nice. I'm glad that we make at least some people sort of feel that way. You know, I mean, I'm glad that we can produce something that some people enjoy. And hey, I told you, even at Dragon Con, I had people coming up to me and saying that they, you know, they want to talk about the Wishbone, you know, and they are how much they enjoy it. So that's, I mean, I'm just glad we're providing a service for somebody. I mean, like you say, we'd be on the phone doing this. I guess I wouldn't have this. You'd hang up on me if I had the sound effects on the phone. But that's cool. I appreciate that.
It is nice that we, you know, to get this kind of feedback, to know that we're not like transmitting into the dark recesses of space and no one is listening. So.
Nobody's listening. Somebody on Jupiter is listening. That's about it.
All right. But he has to ask an actual question, was, do we expect Sean to be healthy for the Oklahoma game? And if not, will we be able to move the ball against them?
You know, this is the thing. We keep hearing yes, but they told us he was going to be healthy against Memphis, and honest to goodness, that was as bad of a quarterbacking performance in the first half against Memphis as I've seen in a while. I mean, it looked about like the second half against Georgia this year. So I don't know. They keep saying that he's going to – I mean, I hear conflicting reports. Some people say it's a career-ending injury, and he won't even be back. So what are you expecting out of him, if anything, in the Sugar Bowl?
I hope he plays.
Can Stidham play?
Stidham is not eligible this season. So it would burn a year. It's the same thing with, like, we're not going to play Woody Barrett,
right?
Because we could play him, but it would burn a year of eligibility for four game. Quarters of football.
But it's the Sugar Bowl, though, man. It's almost worth it.
I get it. So, but I mean, it really is a situation where, if say, you know, we haven't heard. And Sean White is having surgery or something, and it's not going to get better before the game. Then it's going to be, you know, Jeremy and JF3. That's what we got. So, but it's also like, I know I feel the same way. But I want to also tell you, Oklahoma's defense is awful. And I mean, like, really, really, really bad. And I think that with Petway, I know is going to be back 100%. And him and Kerryon back 100%. I think we're going to run all over them. So I think and quarterbacking is going to be way easier against them than it is against a lot of the other teams we played. So in that part, I think we'll be okay. I hope Sean White plays. Let me say this. I hope Sean White plays. If Sean White plays, I feel really good about our chances. If Sean White doesn't play, it's good. It's going to be a challenge because we're going to have to score some points to beat that team.
Well, if Sean White plays, but he plays like he did against Memphis in last year's bowl game, that's what I'm worried about, because mm-hmm. he was hitting the other team right in the numbers, you know, pick sixes and stuff. It kind of puts things in perspective. We spent the first 20 minutes of the show gushing over getting this new quarterback and having such a great quarterback lineup for next year, and now you start looking at the Sugar Bowl. If you don't have Sean White, or you have an injured Sean White, man, that perspective comes back and smacks you in the mouth, doesn't it?
It makes you appreciate Stidham a little bit more. Ooh. Looking at the situation we're walking into there. So.
Yeah. Can't even play Woody Barrett. So it really is. It'll be down to JF3. Oh, and what do you do if JF3 comes out and lights up Oklahoma?
I'd say thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's about it. Yeah, I guess. Woo, okay.
Our next question comes from Theodore Roosevelt.
What's he up appreciate to these that. Days?
Teddy, he says, an Auburn fan apparently. He says, now that we have Jarrett Stidham, how much do you think our SEC and national championship chances for next year have improved?
All right, let's just hold up on the national championship talk, because all that does is put us back where we were after the Arkansas game this year, which is, oh, national playoffs are bust. Playoffs are bust, and boy, did we bust.
Well, but I think if the attitude that if you don't win the national title, the season's a failure, is leads you to a lot of seasons of failure, which is kind of one of your things with the Sugar Bowl. But I do think we have seen Gus. You love Gus's offense, and we all enjoy this offense, and we have seen it get to higher levels when we have a really talented quarterback playing at a high level with good players around him. And I think Stidham could take us there in terms of the offense. So, you know, I think the SEC as a whole is going to get better next year. I think that, you know,
sure.
But I think we're going to be in really, really good position. I mean, I feel really, really good about it. So,
yep.
Next question comes from Auburn Elvis.
Oh.
Very nice. A less conversation, a little more action.
Woo!
All this aggravation and satisfaction in me.
All right, Auburn Elvis. I got to work on that.
All right, he says, I saw Oklahoma had two Heisman runner-ups on their team. I guess that means they're a good team, doesn't it? So will they score more than 30 on us? Will we score more than 30 on them? Also, looking ahead to next season, will you and Van make it to the Clemson and Missouri games, respectively?
Oh. What about you? What, are you going to any games next year?
I'm going to try.
You go to games in Auburn more often than you do anywhere else, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going to try. So we'll see.
I haven't been on the planes. I haven't been on the planes since 2000, the Arkansas State game of 2013. But we will definitely be in Columbia for the Missouri game.
That'll be a fun game.
There's no way I'm missing that. And hey, didn't they end up their quarterback or something had a phenomenal year, even though they sucked overall?
That Drew Locke guy for them, I'm telling you, I watched that game where they beat Arkansas that Friday after Thanksgiving. That guy's got a big arm.
He was like second in stats just to somebody. I was like, whoa, what? Missouri, what?
No, they went to a much more of an up-tempo passing kind of offense, and he threw the ball over the place. Now, it didn't help him. In some games, they still got blown out of the stadium. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he did throw the ball a lot. So the first part of his question is, you know, are they going to score? Is Oklahoma going to score more than 30 on us?
Probably.
I said when we played Clemson, that was the best offense we were going to face this year, and I'm taking that back now because Oklahoma is the best offense we're going to face that all season.
But nobody scored 30 on us, though.
I know that. So I mean, I think if anybody's going to 30, I think it's probably them. I mean, Baker Mayfield's great. He's a really, really excellent quarterback. He's not a big guy, but he's very accurate, but he also moves around well. So back when you rush him, he just kind of rolls out a little bit and still completes big plays. The D.D. Westbrook guy, the receiver that was also the Heisman finalist for them, has been a huge player, but really the best receiver in the country from like the third or fourth game on. Mm-hmm. And they have two really good running backs too, like two guys that are probably going to play in the NFL, and Piran and Mixon. So
right.
Their defense is bad. I think they're going to score a lot of points on us, or we're going to have to score points on them. But they haven't, they've lost two games this year to Houston and Ohio State. And Ohio State beat the living crap out of them in Norman. And Westbrook didn't play in that game or didn't play much in that game. But I think, Ohio State's defensive line really had their way with them, and I think our defensive line could really disrupt their offense. And I think like our offense, in the Superdome on that turf, our offense is going to be fast and explosive. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to definitely put up some big points. Our next question comes from Pat Ringer.
Hey, I've heard of him.
He says, I love Sean White's attitude and competitive spirit. Combine that with his less than ideal size, and he's easy to pull for, especially when we've seen how good his A game is. Yeah. Is there any chance he could beat out Stidham as a starting quarterback?
Well, we sort of talked about that. I mean, he knows the offense probably better than anybody, right? And
I think it's possible. I mean, I think, some of it is because he knows the offense and because he, when he's healthy, his A game is really high. Like the team plays really well when he's playing. So I think, I certainly don't think it's going to be a situation where the first week of spring practice, everybody's like, well, that's it. It's over. Stidham's the guy. I think they're going to drag it out, and it may be that, Stidham comes in the spring and is awesome, and they're like, well, there's no doubt about it. But I suspect it's probably good. They probably won't name a starter until fall next year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that they'll name a starter because you'll have at least four guys, depending on what Franklin does, that'll be competing, and they'll want to leave it going as long as possible. That's kind of what Gus does. So.
Yeah. All right. Our next question is from Reynolds Wolf.
An unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thunder snow.
Never gets old.
All right. Reynolds' question says, Is it just me, or have you gentlemen experienced the same thing? A warm breeze of positivity as the gloomy phalanx of winter approaches. After the early September stumbles, the six-game win streak, and the late-season peppering of injuries, idiocy, and ineptitude by players, fans, and coaches, I get a sense of, well, optimism. Do you feel? Do you both feel the same thing? If so, why?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we've been talking about why, because the things we know are good are going to be good again, and the things that we were kind of struggling at are getting good, and I feel very – I mean, hey, let me ask you this. How about
wait,
the kicking
there's
game?
There's a lot more to his question.
Well, let me ask you, is Carlson turning pro?
I don't think so. I mean, it could happen, but I mean, he could turn pro, and he would get drafted because, again, there's a lot of bad kickers in the NFL right now, and I think he's definitely going to play in the NFL. But since his brother's coming next year and they could hang out together, and I think he's going to come back. And he needs to come back and win the Grozer Award.
Man. I'm tired of Auburn quarterbacks always losing that. I mean,
kickers.
We've had probably as good of a run of kickers over the last, 20 years or more as any school in the country. And yet we never win it. We always end up second or third. Like every kicker we've ever had has finished like second or third for the Groza Award. In fact, somebody out there want to do this, look up the Groza Award finalists, okay, over the last 20 or 30 years, going back to like the last time Auburn didn't have a good kicker was 1986. I kid you not. 86 was the last year that we really struggled at kicking, okay? And so go back and look up our kickers and see. I wonder if any other program has had so many consecutive kickers come close to winning the Lou Groza Award and none of them ever winning it. It's like the women's basketball team that kept, you know, getting to the final two every year and losing the national championship game. It's unbelievable. There's your assignment, folks. Somebody do that.
I'm going back to Reynolds' question now.
Yeah.
He says, why do we feel the optimism? He says, Jared Stidham's Twitter verbal strokes the fire, positive fires, no doubt, but there was a smoke of better vibes a while before his announcement. Could it have been the realization that we're actually in the Sugar Bowl playing against Oklahoma, having our shot a redemption against that a bad word, Bob Stoops, to pay it back for 2004? Maybe that's it, but could it be something else? As we meander down the 2016 dirt road in the puke green Buick Skylark of our season, with mismatched doors, missing hubcaps, dented fenders, ripped Naugahyde seats, and a coat hanger for an antenna, I cannot help but look in the rearview mirror and see the losses to Georgia and Alabama. They're fading in the distance, and in both distance and cloaking dust, disappearing from view but not from memory. The anger is still there. But maybe it's just the increasing span in time that offers another feature, perspective. Perspective takes the wheel and drives us to these key points, none of which includes the Stuckey's out by the interstate. Here it goes. We played the toughest schedule in the NCAA. We finished second in the SEC. We've gone from the Birmingham Bowl to the Bayou in the Sugar Bowl. Higher win total than 2015. Strongest defense in over a decade, great talent returning on both sides of the ball, remarkable talent coming on board, and much more favorable lineup in 2017 with Georgia and Alabama at home. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think a good old perspective is and was the elixir of whatever disappointment one lingered. Would love to hear your take. And he says also, what becomes of JF3 once Stidham's arrives? You guys are the awesomest. Happy holidays, Reynolds.
Oh, Reynolds.
Please clap.
he writes an essay.
I do love it when Reynolds gets it going. Yeah, that's fantastic. I was hoping he would be contributing something to us this season, and he sure has. He's been giving us these outstanding sort of. It's like the Charles Kuralt on the CBS show he used to give the long essays. Fantastic. I love it. Yeah. No, I think he summed it up pretty well, and I don't deny any of that. I mean, I've said all along, the Georgia game absolutely just rubs me raw and drives me nuts. I can't stand it. It's inexplicable. It makes me furious. The A&M game, you may recall, if you guys were listening, you know, after that game, was driving me crazy. Those are the two that really drove me nuts, and I know how people felt about you know, Clemson. Looking back on that one, though, I wasn't as upset, mainly just because I was in such shock over how everybody else was reacting to it. Which I've never seen a fan base turn. You know, it was like we'd lost the Citadel, and we're going to fire Jack Crow. So, I don't know. You have any thoughts beyond what we've already talked about for Reynolds?
No, I mean, I've said this before, I'll say it again. The Georgia loss bothers me today, and it's going to continue. It's going to be one of the losses. There are some losses that just hang with you, bother you forever.
Yep.
And that's going to be one of them. Out of all the games this season, that's the one that I'm still upset about. I'm going to be upset about. So,
sure.
All right. More listener questions. David Glenn asked to compare Stidham and White. And I think the biggest thing is Stidham is bigger. He's like, you know, 6'3", 220, kind of much thicker guy and bigger, you know, heavier guy than Sean White and a taller guy.
As accurate as Sean, but he can throw it downfield too.
And it's got a much bigger arm, so he can throw the ball downfield. And he can run a little bit. I mean, I think his stats at Baylor didn't show it because they didn't really need him to, but I think he can run. And then I'm not saying we're going to go straight to the Nick Marshall playbook with the zone read stuff, but I think it's there if we want to do it. And I think it's also the kind of thing if we're running the ball with the running backs and throwing it deep and they leave him alone, then he can make him pay.
Well, he was listed as a dual threat quarterback.
He is. I mean, he went to Stevensville, which runs, you know, the spread, high school spread offense, basically. And he ran a ton, for thousands of yards in high school in addition to throwing. So he can run. And I think, you know, the goal line is going to be, you know, him as a threat is going to help. So Sean White, you know, like you said, he knows the offense. He has the confidence of his teammates. He has the toughness. And I think he has the game experience that Stidham doesn't have. You know, Stidham played 3 games. Sean White's played in whatever, 12 at this point probably. And so he has a lot more SEC game experience that's going to give him an advantage. What does Josh Corbett ask? What does Auburn at the wide receiver position look like if Stidham wins a job? And I think, you know, it's exciting to think about these young wide receivers with him, you know, because you've got these guys like Kyle Davis and Nate Craig Myers running deep at him throwing the ball over the defense. I mean, that's the thing that really excites me about it is I think those guys have kind of untapped, you know, they were freshmen this year and they were raw, but they have obviously a ton of potential to go out and make those plays that we could come out against teams and just, you know, let them have it.
I just want to feel like when next season is over that we've really gotten the potential out of a lot of our players. I mean, I feel like for all the years that Gus has been around, we've gotten the best out of our offensive line. We've gotten the best out of our running backs. We've gotten the best out of our special teams. I just want to feel like the receivers, because we've always had one or two that step up and have been very good, but I'd like to feel like our entire, you know, we've got a core of receivers now that we've never really had before, not since the, you know, 2004 team had all those receivers. So that's kind of what I'd like to see is them live up to their potential.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they have a lot. They have potential, and I think unlocking that could take the offense to the next level because the running game is, you know, we could see it. It was there this year with Petway and Carry On.
Yeah.
So that part, the passing part, it takes it to the next level. I agree. All right. Wynn Carroll asked, did Baker Mayfield truly deserve a Heisman invite or was it merely there to fill out the field? Mayfield had a great season. I think he's going to break the career quarterback rating number record for college quarterbacks. Okay, so to give you some perspective, Cam Newton's season in 2010, his quarterback rating for the year was 182, and Mayfield's this season is 197.
Holy!
So I mean, it's way ahead of everybody else. He's completing 71% of his passes with 38 TDs and 8 interceptions. So I mean, he's been very, very effective throwing the ball. So, he's had a great season, and I think, they went undefeated in conference play, and I don't have any problem with him getting invited to New York.
I've literally watched 0 seconds of Oklahoma football this year, so I don't have a clue.
Okay. I mean, I could tell you I've watched him, I don't know, 3 times this year or whatever, and he's really good. Their running backs, I really respect their running backs, and Westbrook is the best receiver we played this year. We have our hands full with him. And I think they're going to go back and watch the Ole Miss game, and they can absolutely execute that kind of passing game against us. Yeah. So we got to be, you know, I mean, but it's also the thing, we got, you know, several weeks to get it together before then, you know, it's coming.
Yeah.
So the difference is they're like Ole Miss. If Ole Miss had, you know, like LSU's running backs, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, great.
So, I'm laying it out there.
Nothing to worry about there.
Our defense has got to play their best game of the year. So,
wow.
Earl at the Prowler 1 says, with Stidham and Petway returning, you think Auburn can achieve second in the SEC West and a New Year's Six bowl game next year? I couldn't help myself.
You know, that was the big Twitter thing, right?
I saw it. Yes, you were on that today.
People were jumping my crap about it too, but it was just somebody was saying that somebody, one of the media guys, one of the big media guys. We're little media guys. We're sub media guys. But one of the big media guys tweeted something to the effect of that with Stidham coming in and Petway coming back, Auburn could be as high as second in the SEC and go to a New Year's Six Bowl and win 10 games. And I said, so basically, other than one win, basically everything we did this year without them for half the season or all the season. So yeah, that's kind of weird. That just continues to be why I don't understand people's mindsets, but okay.
KC1 is at Brave Man Fan says the Stidham was a top dual threat recruit, but he didn't run much at Baylor. How much of a mobile threat will he be in our offense?
Right. That's what we were talking about. I mean, I think it's true. Baylor's never been – I mean, even like RG3 wasn't a huge running quarterback, was he? He threw it all over the place.
He ran some too, but it was kind of – they didn't run it the way that Auburn's had quarterbacks run in the past. I mean, they're more tailback running oriented offense. So,
yeah.
I think he was a true freshman, you know, and I think they were trying not to put him out there – too much with that stuff. So I definitely think he has the athletic ability. There's a play, you go back and watch the highlights of the 3 games he played. There's a play in, you know, the Kansas State game where they're on like the 10-yard line and he basically runs over a guy to get in the end zone, going a keeper, which I thought was pretty good. So
nice.
Well,
tell me this. How much do you want him to bring some of that Baylor offense with him, like the wide set receivers and all that?
There's stuff that he could do, you know, suggest stuff. They're not going to listen to him. I mean, they're going to do – Gus and Red are going to do what they're going to do. But
here's the real question, okay? And this is a question we should have asked from the very beginning of this show. He was a great quarterback in the Baylor offense with Art Briles, okay? Auburn's passing offense gets criticized. Now, when it works, it works. Right, I mean, there's several plays we run on offense in the passing game that are very successful consistently, but it gets some criticism for not being so sophisticated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How is he going to fit into an offense that may be at least theoretically is similar, right? In some schemes or in some approaches, it's similar, but in actual execution, maybe not as sophisticated or just different.
I think it's very similar, and I think there's some execution. The passing game stuff is different, but I think, you know, by the time he goes through bowl practice and spring practice, he'll be fine. I think the biggest thing is, like, I think, again, the Gus Malzahn offense likes to incorporate the deep pass, and I think that he can do that. I think he can deliver it down the field accurately, and I think, you know, we'll have the receivers to do that. And I think that's the part that he brings that, you know, that – whether it's the Baylor offense or this offense that's there, like the, you know, they're just kind of the Sammy Coates go route kind of stuff that we didn't do a lot of this year. I think we'll do a lot more of that next year.
That was so much what the 2015 game plan was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
and it just never, ever happened. And it really hurt 2015, the season, the outcome, because they had to redesign everything on the fly, which we kind of did this year.
Yep. Tiger Beasley says, thoughts on Tuberville leaving Cincinnati or his overall career? I have a soft spot for him since he was at Auburn when I arrived.
Oh, Tubbs. I mean, we all love Tubbs. I know, it just never really clicked for him in these other two schools. He was okay at Texas Tech, but he kind of got out when the getting was good, and then he was okay for a while at Cincinnati, but, you know, Cincinnati has become kind of like Arkansas State, a place that the young up-and-coming coaches go to make a reputation. I think, didn't Tennessee and Notre Dame's coaches both come out of Cincinnati over the last few years?
Oh, yeah.
And bringing Tubbs in was just kind of odd. It's just not the kind of coach they usually hired.
I think it was an attempt to reverse that, to not pick the young up-and-coming guy because they were tired of losing him. They wanted somebody who was going to be there a few years.
Well, that's what they got.
They did, and I think, you know, I know this is be a familiar, like, we didn't like Tuberville. He did a good job at Auburn, and I'm, you know, he's had a good career. What undermined him was change in offensive coordinator. He lost Eddie Graham, and he went to, who was the running back coach at Auburn under him, was his offensive coordinator at Cincinnati, did a really good job. And he was the offensive coordinator at Kentucky this year, did a good job.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tuberville replaced him, but the guy that replaced him wasn't as good, and their offense really struggled. So that was it.
That was it, yeah. Well, we love Tubbs, and wish him only the best.
All right, last one. James Jones says, does Stidham get to practice with a team for the bowl game like Brandon Jacobs did a few years ago? He said he could help prepare for Mayfield, which is true. Like, he could be the scout team quarterback thing and be Baker Mayfield in the bowl game. And he does get to practice with, you know, he doesn't get to play in the bowl game. He doesn't get to practice, you know, until through the bowl practices. So that's exciting.
That's what I thought. Yeah, good. Can only help.
Yeah. That is it for listener questions.
Wow, what a veritable plethora, a flock, a herd of listener questions and good stuff, all good stuff. That was very good.
A cornucopia.
Yeah, I do actually, when we're talking about the Sugar Bowl, I do have... Whoa. Did my thing... What happened? Are you there?
I'm here.
What just happened? Let's try that again. Are you kidding?
Factoid of the week.
So I'm going to leave all this in. I'm not going to edit it out because this is the kind of stuff that John and I have to deal with almost on a weekly basis, is stuff just randomly not working anymore. Don't know why. I wonder what happens if I unplug it and just play it through the iPad.
Don't.
Can you hear that? Barely?
Barely.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Great. It says it's still working, but I guess my little speaker died. I have to get a new one. Well, anyway, here's your factoid really quick. Auburn has played in 5 Sugar Bowls in history, which is one more reason why I'm really excited that we're in the dang Sugar Bowl. Get this, John. We've scored more than one touchdown once. We've scored one touchdown 3 times, and we've scored no touchdowns once. Now, here's the weird thing about it. In Sugar Bowls where Auburn has scored multiple touchdowns, our record is 0-1. In games where we scored one touchdown, our Sugar Bowl record is 1-1-1. And in games where we fail to score any touchdowns, our record is 1-0. And not only that, three different Auburn kickers have each kicked 3 field goals in Sugar Bowls. Del Greco in the Sugar Bowl against Michigan, 83. Win Lyle against Syracuse in 87. And and John Vaughn against Virginia Tech in 2004. They each kicked 3 field goals. And here's the biggest trivia question of all to do with Auburn Sugar Bowls. And this was my trivia question I asked on Twitter. So if you folks have already heard it, you don't get to answer. But John, who is the only Auburn running back to ever score a touchdown in the Sugar Bowl, a rushing touchdown?
I tried to answer this and I got it wrong.
Well, the popular answers I got were, of course, Bo Jackson. That was a 9-7 game.
I guess Stacey Danley.
Yeah, and we did not score a rushing touchdown on Syracuse. He played in the 87 one. Did he play in the 88 one? Maybe he did. Yeah.
That's why I guessed him, because I thought he might have played in both of them.
Yeah, we didn't. That's a good thought, but we didn't score a rushing touchdown either one of them. In fact, Pat Dye, get this. Pat Dye, of all people, coached in 3 Sugar Bowls, John, and Auburn never scored a rushing touchdown in any of those 3 Sugar Bowls. With the running backs we had in 83, Lionel James, Tommy Agee, and Bo Jackson, and Brent Fullwood, we had all of them in 83, didn't score a touchdown on Michigan. Who Jim Harbaugh was the backup quarterback on that Michigan team. And then in 87 and 88, we had Stacey Danley and James Joseph. We didn't have a great – you and I have always said, right, that the main weakness on that 87-88 team was we didn't have that big monster running back. And I've always said, you know, if Emmitt Smith had done the right thing in his life, we would have won 2 national championships.
You got that right.
Maybe 3. But he went to Florida, where he went 0-3 against us, and we had no good running. Well, Stacey Danley and James Joseph were not bad, but they weren't Emmitt Smith. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so we ended up doing what we did. And then in the 2004 game, Jason Campbell threw a touchdown, but we did not score a rushing touchdown. So it was not Ronnie Brown or Cadillac either. So the only running back to score, and he scored multiple. He scored 2 Sugar Bowl touchdowns for Auburn. Was Harry Unger? I think it's Harry Unger. Mm-hmm. That name just right on the tip of your tongue, wasn't it?
No.
I mean, that's the first person you think of when you think of dominating Auburn running back. He wasn't even like the star running back on that team. It'd be like if we went to the Sugar Bowl. It'd be like if, you know, Malik Miller scored 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma. It's just, you know, he was like the second or third level back. But that was – and then Pat Sullivan 3-for-1. I'll tell you the other ones real quick. In the 87 Sugar Bowl, Jeff Berger threw a touchdown to, of course, Lawyer Tillman. In the 88 Sugar Bowl, Reggie Slack threw a touchdown. This is off the top of my head, so I'm trying to think of these. Reggie Slack threw a touchdown to tight end Walter Reeves, who was awesome. And in the 04 Sugar Bowl, Jason Campbell threw a touchdown to, I want to say, Devin Aromashadu.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's all the touchdowns we've scored. Pat Sullivan had one, too, to, I forget, the receiver. And that's it.
We better score some more this time. And I think we will, because their defense is bad.
We're going to need to score more touchdowns in this game than in all the previous Sugar Bowls we played in and put together.
I think you're right.
How about that? And kick about as many field goals, too.
Hopefully we're not too many field goals, more just extra points this game.
So any other thoughts on the Sugar Bowl?
We'll do one more before the Sugar Bowl, I think. But I think it is going to be they're a great offense. Their defense is awful, like the, you know, Arkansas State kind of that level of defense. So I think we had to roll up and down the field against them. But it may be more of a high-scoring kind of back-and-forth game they were used to playing, but also I think they haven't played anybody as good as our defense. So I think, you know, we can hold them to field goals and we can get some penetration and stop some of their drives with a big sack or, you know, a turnover or something. I think that'll be the key to the game. And also I think maybe a thing where we try to run the ball and control the clock a little bit and keep the ball away from them. So,
well, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not, predicting a win or anything. I'm just looking forward to seeing Auburn playing in the Sugar Bowl again because it's been a little while.
Yep.
We have one other little segment here before we get into our last couple of things. Let's see. We got to hit this button here. Oh, I can't do it.
I hear it.
Well, we got a
cage. Oh, stop it. Kind of doing this on the fly here because everything's gone wrong. All right. You've heard about him. You know about him. He comes on the show every once in a while. It's the most interesting coach in the world. Other teams have named their stadium after him. I'm dancing. Florida fans agree that he is neither a Gator nor Gator bait. Though he's never coached a game there, it is widely agreed that he is Penn State. LSU fans start drinking when they schedule him. He once told Steve Spurrier, "Try a visor, my friend." Other schools have retroactively awarded him national championships. And finally, Nick Saban dreams of being processed by him.
That was weird.
He's the most interesting coach in the world. War Eagle, my friends. There you go.
It's very
our most,
nice.
And possibly our last most interesting coach in the world segment. Yeah, I was telling John before the show that I had actually written a segment for it several months ago, and then I lost the index card that I'd written them all down on. And these are hard for me to – I mean, I know that these aren't the greatest ever, but these are hard, man. I mean, if anybody out there has a great idea for a most interesting coach segment, send it in to me. I'll be happy to look at it because these are not easy to make up. And I lost it, and so I wrote those others that we used last week. And then I found the index card the other day, and I'm like, oh, we'll do back-to-back. That's fine. So those were the ones I actually made up quite a while ago. But I do the best I can with them. So, all right. Couple of mentions right now. I want everybody to know I didn't put it into the White Rocket. I mean, I didn't put it into the AU Wishbone iTunes feed. But we did do, for those of you that listened to the first Formula One show, we did a second and sort of season wrap-up Formula One show on this time last weekend. And it's up now. It's at the White Rocket feed. So you can either go to whiterocket.podbean.com or just go on iTunes and search for the White Rocket podcast. And it's the most recent episode is our Formula One wrap-up show. And the guest this time was Alan Porter, who is a great guy. He's British, but he lives in the United States. And he's been a Formula One fan since he was born. And so, you know, having him on the show was like having, you know, me and John talking about SEC football. I mean, I knew that from him I would really get the real deal, and I thought Alan did a great job. So I want to thank you for you kindly stepped aside and gave up the co-chair seat for that episode to let Alan be on there, and I appreciate that. So, because, you know, he knew more than me and you and 50 other people put together. So that, I thought it went really well.
No, I thought it was good. And he does know just a tad more than me about Formula One.
He knows a tad more than me about it, no doubt. I want to point out a couple other podcast things. If you don't know, we have the White Rocket podcast, which is the sister show to this program. Of course, AU Wishbone's about Auburn football and sports and so forth. The White Rocket show is where John and I and other guests talk about everything else, basically anything else. We've talked about Led Zeppelin. We've done, obviously, Formula One. But we've done, like, James Bond movies episode after episode. So if you like James Bond, we've got dozens of episodes. And we're doing a new James Bond episode coming up tomorrow night for the White Rocket show. We're going to talk about the gadgets of James Bond. And John and I will be joined by Jared Albrich, who is my friend that's the new art director at our studio and is a big Bond fan. And then there's also the Avengers Assemble podcast, where we talk about Marvel's Avengers, the movies and the comics and the stories and the history and all that. So you can find any of those. Just go on iTunes and search for those shows, Avengers Assemble podcast or White Rocket podcast, or go to the pod, you know, just Google pod, the Podbean page, avengersassemble.podbean.com. Don't forget to check out Lorendo. I mentioned it always at the beginning, but we got another segment coming up. I just want to throw out there, don't forget Lorendo. Apparently folks have been picking it up for Christmas, and so it's going to make a great Christmas gift for a whole lot of Auburn fans, and we're really excited about that. Ken Ringer, the author, is very excited that people have been buying it and enjoying it so much and reading it and giving him good feedback. So we hope that you will go ahead and pick that up. If you get you an Amazon gift certificate for Christmas or something, you might want to pick it up. And I think we need to get the book on Kindle in the new year. We should have had it up already, but we'll get it out there in the new year. Anything else we need to mention, John, before we get to the Around the SEC?
I was going to say, if you want a signed copy before Christmas, you can email us at auwishbone@gmail.com, and we can hook that up.
Yeah, it's getting tight, but this is your last chance. Go ahead and assume this is your last chance to get it, because Christmas is coming in like 2 weeks. But this is your last big shot to get it. All right, well, I guess I can pick the iPad up again. I can't believe that the dadgum speaker's failing on me. Let's see. We'll have to do this button. Sounds better on that speaker anyway, doesn't it? What's going on around the SEC, John?
Well, I mean, we don't have any games for a little while until the bowl games kick up around the 18th or 19th.
Please hurry. Please hurry, bowl games. I need more football.
They're coming. Football's coming.
Thank you.
Lane Kiffin is definitely, looks like, leaving Alabama.
out the back door with a swift boot to his butt, apparently. He's not going anywhere. He's just leaving Alabama.
I think he's leaving by choice. I mean, I think if he wanted to stay, he'd be the offensive coordinator. And I think he's going to be the offensive coordinator through the bowl game, through the playoffs.
But where's he going?
I think he interviewed for the Houston job. He interviewed for the South Florida job. I think he's going to leave and go be the offensive coordinator at LSU. I really do. And
okay, go ahead.
Are you laughing at him or Alabama or both or?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
I just love the idea that he's going from helping them win national championships to helping beat them. He's taking everything Saban has taught him and going to help them lose.
Well, but also, like, I think he's done a really good job at Alabama, coaching those quarterbacks up, and adapting the offense the way they have, that's him. He did that. And so I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. And if he leaves, I think that part is going to take a step back.
John, that Auburn offense sucks and is no good unless Lane Kiffin's coaching it, in which case it's great.
Continuing on the coordinator front, I mean, if he doesn't leave or if LSU doesn't hire him, LSU still has to find an offensive coordinator. And Ole Miss has to hire two coordinators. Their defensive coordinator retired and their offensive coordinator was kind of pushed out the door.
I was going to say, I like how you put it. You put it in our show notes as Ole Miss lost both coordinators. And I made a note. I said lost, as in Hugh Freeze drove them out into the country, let them out of his pickup truck, and then stomped on the gas and took off.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, I think the defensive coordinator, they certainly would have kept around. I don't think they view this as his fault as much as a talent thing, but he's retiring, Kaufman. So they got to replace both. That's a big deal.
Is there a danger that we could lose Crime Dog to them?
I mean, I think he is interviewed for a couple other jobs. So there's a danger that we could lose there. That the only coaching issues I've heard with Auburn is there's a danger that we could lose McGriff to another job.
Right. I don't worry about that. I like him a lot. I've been very impressed.
No, I think the secondary played really well this year, so I want him to stay. So
absolutely,
we'll see. That's the only thing and that kind of thing. Generally, I would say you might hear it after the bowl game. You might hear it, a lot of times they'll wait till after signing day to do that kind of stuff. So
I haven't cheered for a crime dog so hard since the glory days of the Braves in the mid-90s.
That's it.
Well, I think that is it. I think we are pretty much at the end of our usual going over a show, but we didn't go over too much tonight. We were at a little over, but we're at an hour 10 right now, I think. So that's not too
bad. That's plenty.
Yeah, we've done plenty. We've done good work tonight, I think. And I haven't had to yell at anybody. I haven't had to berate anybody. Never you, but I mean the listeners. I mean, here's the funny thing, right? On the last episode 2 weeks ago, I basically berated the audience, and we thought we would never get another listener. And that episode has gotten 200 more listeners than any episode we've done in the last year.
Hmm.
And it was 2 hours long, so I figured they're going to look at it and go, oh, Lord, 2 hours and this. And then he yells at us and calls us stuff and everything. I'm not listening to that. No, that's what the people want. They want tough love. They want discipline, and they want the hammer dropped on them, and that's what I'm here to do, apparently. I didn't want to, but I guess that's what I'm here to do. So,
there you go.
All right. Well, don't forget to check out our other two books, Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams. We got to do another book sometime. You can't let your dad just have all the glory. Come on. We got to do something. Pick those up, get them on your Kindle. Those are both on Kindle. So if you have an e-reader of any kind, or you got an iPad or phone or whatever, you can just go on Amazon and buy Decades of Dominance, A Season of Our Dreams, and download them instantly right onto your device. They're only $3 or $4 on there. And you can start reading right this very minute. So it's well worth it, I think. So I guess we're going to get on out of here. Any last thoughts, John?
No, just very excited about Stidham, committing and Petway coming back. I think it really gives us some, there was kind of a bitter taste in all of our mouths in the season, and I think those two things really kind of are taking some of that away and giving people, a good taste in their mouths and something to look forward to. So
absolutely. I think a Sugar Bowl win would be huge too, but I'm not counting on it. It's just going to be very tough, but it would be so nice if we could cap everything off with a big Sugar Bowl win too. So,
and it gets a good team. I'm excited to play them.
Absolutely. We're playing over our heads probably, but we'll see what happens. So, all right. Well, our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Okie doke. All right. Very good. Very good. Let's see. We'll reconvene 8:30 tomorrow night and talk about the gadgets of Bond.
I'll be ready.
Good deal. Go to bed.
Thanks.
Go to bed.